Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode number 148 of the Rewatch Project with Hannah and Mike. I am Mike, and with me, as always, is Hannah. How are you this evening, Hannah?
I'm fine, thank you.
Excellent. So, not sick, tired, or waiting for the kids to leave you alone?
Oh.
Or some combination of the
very,
three?
Very much tired, but, you know, I don't need to say that every week.
I remember, I think this is probably a meme or a tweet or something, but I do remember Words of Wisdom saying that I didn't realise that adulthood would just be being tired all the time and Googling how to do stuff. Feels like a very true assessment of 21st century adult life, that does.
Well, I'm on day six of 15 days straight working. So, you know, listeners.
Yeah.
My God.
So, what are you talking about tonight?
We are talking about the second part of the Battlestar Galactica TV miniseries.
That's right. Backdoor pilot, as they say in the business.
Indeed.
And do you want to tell us a little bit about
Well, the synopsis is very long.
Yeah, no, but who's wrote it and directed it?
Oh, okay.
It?
So it
like is... we've done 147 times.
Well, it's written and directed by the exact same people as the last one.
Okay, could you remind me who they are?
So it's written by...
Oh, blood out of a stone!
For fuck's sake! Okay, it's written by Ronald D. Moore and Glenn Larson.
Well, I know that.
It is directed by Michael Reimer. I'm going to throw this phone at you in a minute.
No, you're going to pick up my phone and throw that at me. That's more your style.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, well, yes, so this is the second part of the miniseries. So, and as I say, this was very much a... the hope was that this was going to be a go to being a show. They didn't know that it was if it was going to or not, of course, when they were making it, but it was very much designed to be that. And yes, we listeners will know that we both enjoyed the first part. So are you looking forward to part two, Hannah?
Oh, very much so.
Excellent. Okay, a couple of quick bits of housekeeping before we get to that, though. Firstly, and most importantly, a reminder that we always appreciate feedback, which you can send to us at rewatchprojectpodcast@gmail.com. Or you can leave us comments on our YouTube channel if you prefer, and we will read those out if they feel readback-ish in timbre and content. Mm-hmm. And also, please do remember we are on Twitter and Instagram, where in both cases we are at RewatchProj. Apple Podcasts and iTunes reviews, very much appreciated. And also check out our friend shows, including Entertainment Landfill, Chinstroker versus Punter, his film, her movie, Film Bastards, Good, the Bad and the Odd, and Talk That Rhythm podcast. Do we have any feedback, Anna?
Indeed we do.
Capital. Let's have it.
Silver Surfer says, Frack, yeah. I didn't get into the show until the last couple of seasons, but really enjoyed this series. Hope you are both well as always.
Wow, I'd be really curious to know if when he says he didn't get into the show until the last couple of series or seasons, that he didn't just watch the last couple of seasons or he discovered the show and then went back and caught up like the whole world did with Breaking Bad, for example. Because I can't imagine what watching just the... Because there's only four seasons of this show. And like I said, the seasons are pretty short, so it's a pretty quick watch. I can't imagine watching just those last two seasons, though, without the context of the first two. I mean, you wouldn't have a frigging clue what was going on.
Or I suppose the alternative is that he watched the first two seasons and thought they were right and then really dug it in the third and fourth seasons.
Yeah, clarify. I'd be curious to know. But I'm glad to know that Silver Surfer, it's not a long shot to think that somebody who is a fan of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. would also be a fan of this other genre show.
And, you know, what's not to love about a frack, yeah.
Yeah, frack, yeah. In the original 70s series, because they had the word frack in that as well, but they had other imaginary swearing. Felgacarp, that was another one. That was Battlestar Galactica language for bullshit. They'd be like, that's a load of Felgacarp, that is.
Mm.
And but I always remember my mom freaking out, because I think she thought that they were actually saying the F word. And she's just like, my God, like, you know. She was all a fluster because it was like sort of because in the UK,
what the frack is going on?
Yeah, because the original Battlestar Galactica, it was always on. It was on at like 6 o'clock on Sunday nights.
Yeah,
it was a real cozy kind of, you know,
that's night George before and school Mildred time. It's
Exactly.
We also have an email entitled "New Listener in Wales."
Oh, awesome.
Hi both, I found your podcast via YouTube as I was looking for a show that discussed Battlestar Galactica, and I loved it. Woo-hoo.
The podcast or Battlestar Galactica? I'm choosing to believe they mean, well, both, essentially.
Yeah. It is great getting the perspectives of someone who knows the show and someone who is new to it. Mm. And you guys bounce off each other really well. You have found a new fan. I will definitely be listening to all your one-off episodes as I have never seen Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and I enjoy you guys, so want more.
Excellent.
I hope you carry on watching Battlestar, Hannah. I see you are watching X-Files too, and I would love to hear what you think of the show as it moves forward. As Mike said, it's a pretty quick watch. I also see that you have some video interviews. Any plans to make the regular podcast a video show too, as well as the audio, of course? Right, I am off to listen to your Modern Family episode now. Keep up the good work, Helen from Wales.
Oh, well, shout out for the Modern Family episode. Very nice.
Thank you, Helen.
Yes, thank you, Helen. From Wales.
Yes.
Wow.
Helen from Wales.
Gosh, Helen from Wales.
We will not be videoing the main podcast because...
We're usually just... It's done at the end of the day.
Let me give you a little tableau of the current situation. I am... in my lazy boy chair with a wet bag on my back because I always have a sore back.
I'm in an Armani suit.
I'm wearing a Rolling Stones t-shirt that is my husband's and a pair of pyjama bottoms.
Oh, that's not, that has never been mine.
Well, no.
For like a day.
Well, you didn't fit it to start with, so I purloined that pretty quickly.
I do now. Now, especially, I'm on the low-carb beer. God. So little alcohol, what's the point, beer?
We're sitting in our lounge. My hair has been twisted into little bits all over the place because I fiddle with it while I'm watching TV. And Mike is very much the same in relaxation mode. So
I think
definitely not video.
What we're saying here is thank you for the thought. But
no one needs to see our mugs all the time.
It's not that. It's just it makes it work.
Yeah.
There's more editing that has to be done. And it's one of those things, but I know we would like probably multiply our audience by about 50 by doing that. But the whole point of this podcast is it's a fun thing that we do just to supplement something that we were probably going to do anyway. And I think that to do any more of that could be that step too far, you know, into the it's like when podcasts start having like Patreons and it's
no,
you know, and that works for some people, but and the other thing as
well is well, this is not our career,
no,
this is what we do for fun,
and also having two young kids, I don't think we have enough environmental control to be able to do that. You know, we'd have to, it would...
Our daughter interrupts the podcast quite often.
Yeah, I mean, maybe if we were doing this podcast 10 years ago, then yeah, but I don't think that's going to happen now. But thank you for the thoughts, and was there any other... Sorry, I can't remember the rest of the email. Was there anything else that needed...
Nice to get the perspective of someone who knows the show versus someone who's new to it, and will I continue with Battlestar Galactica? I probably will, but
we've got a lot on our TV plate at the moment.
We're halfway through The Last of Us at the moment, which I'm fully obsessed with. Then once that's done, I want to get back into the X-Files.
And there's 40,000 episodes of that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff on TV as well. I mean, we're still not finished watching Poker Face yet.
We've nearly finished
that. Yeah. Picard's on weekly, The Mandalorian's on weekly.
We kind of stalled everything for, I personally have stalled everything for The Last of Us because I want to finish watching it.
There's another show that I want to take a crack at as well that a lot of people have been recommending that's meant to be quite vibing. You know that Umbridge woman who's in The Last of Us?
She's Melanie Lynskey.
Yeah, there's a show called Yellow Jackets.
Oh, I saw a advert for that.
That's meant to be very vibe similar to Last of Us as well.
I'm pretty sure that's on Neon as well.
Yeah, yeah. So that's piqued my interest as well. Mm. So Might. And but also it was Hannah's suggestion to watch The Last of Us as well. I wasn't really in the mood for it.
Yeah, Mike wasn't super keen.
Well, I think the thing for me is that I've watched a lot of the stuff that, because I mean, in many ways, because obviously The Last of Us is based on a video game, and I love the show, but it is very derivative of a number of other things. I mean, specifically, Children of Men obviously is a big influence on the game. You know. Yeah. And you know, Romero and all those kind of things. So I just felt like I'd kind of burnt out on a lot of those things. But of course, you hadn't really watched those shows, so you were going in with more appetite for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but I think I've seen Children of Men.
But you've not. I've probably watched a lot more apocalyptic zombie shit than you have.
Oh yeah, for sure.
But I do think the show's great. I just think that the performances and the writing and everything about
it's like, fantastic.
And also, you know, it's like 9 or 10 episode seasons. I mean, that's not a big ask anyway, you know.
Nine episodes. We've just finished episode 5.
Yeah, so we're over halfway.
I believe the next episode, our boy Gabe comes back into it.
Oh, gosh. God, he's got that Arnie thing coming up soon as well. He's having a good year, isn't he?
Oh, 100%.
He's on the cover of GQ recently, I noticed.
I think, so, isn't he putting a song out or an album out as well?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I saw something on his Instagram.
Well, we clearly inspired him.
Oh, totally. He didn't have a work ethic before he met us.
His debut album, I Can't Abide Being Dissed, will be, I'll be the Leo meme kind of like when that happens. I'll be Leo memeing all over the place when that happens. But no, thank you for that. I'm probably going to carry on watching Battlestar, but I think it's going to be one of those ones where I'll probably pick an episode out every couple of weeks or something like that, because like I said, there's not very many of them anyway, so I might just chip away. And if Hannah joins me for that, great. If not, then Earth Not, quite frankly.
Well, you have to choose to watch them when I'm around, not just decide to watch them when I'm not here.
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah, exactly. But let's be honest, when are you not here? You're working 48 hours a day at the moment anyway. So I'm
basically chained to the fucking desk at the moment.
Yeah. So anyway, should we do this?
Yep.
Should we hit pause? Thank you so much to those who have fed back. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
We do not take it lightly or for granted. But we're going to hit pause. We're going to watch part 2 of Battlestar Galactica from 2003. And then we will come back and we will give you our thoughts.
CS3P Combat. Player 1, choose your character.
Tired of film and television podcasts where the hosts exist in a blissful state of agreement?
Instructor. Player 2, choose your character.
While you're in luck.
Hunter. Round 1, fight.
Allow me to introduce you to the Chinstroker vs. Punter podcast, featuring two film and television fans from Birmingham, England, who enjoy their media in very different ways.
But anyway, that brings us to the end of the plot of Blue Velvet.
The plot. I mean, the main characters are two of the dullest main characters I've ever encountered in any film.
So join us as we catch up on what we've been watching from our own very different perspectives.
Double KO. Round 2. Fight!
You can find us at csvsp.libsyn.com, also on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, all the places the podcast can be found.
Just really
it's
isn't.
Not visually striking.
No.
Just getting confirmation.
It's just inning. That's the third time, though. I mean, is this on?
And we're back. So we've just finished watching the second episode of the two-part miniseries Battlestar Galactica from 2003.
You were going to say 1983, weren't you?
I'm not sure. I think I was actually going to say 1903, which is...
1903, yeah. That excellent year of sci-fi
TV. I'll tell you what, it was ahead of its time, this was.
It was really ahead of its time.
That crisp 1080p visual was... It was mind-blowing. So apologies if I sound a bit punchy. It's funny because we've said before that whenever we cover either movies or miniseries, that extra runtime really makes all the difference, because we're used to kind of like, you know, 15 minutes of chat, stop to tend to whatever need one of our children's got at some point.
Yeah.
And then come back 42 minutes and then it's... So it's just, you know, I'm too old for this shit, I guess is what I'm saying. But is Hannah too old for this shit? Let's find out. What did you think of the second part of Battlestar Galactica?
I really enjoyed it. I thought the tension in the when they were jumping to like leave properly.
Yeah, it was very well edited, I think, wasn't it?
Very tense, and so well done. I like how it did that great thing of basically setting up the TV series. You know, it doesn't, it sort of concludes things to a point, but opens up a whole heap more.
Well, it does that. And it hadn't occurred to me really until you've said that. It does the pilot thing where at the end of it, it's like, so this is what the show's going to be.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of sets out its stall in some ways.
Even though I have seen this before, so I kind of knew what the reveal at the end was and
you knew the main beats.
Yeah, knew the main beats. I had forgotten the fact that the journalist reporter guy was actually a Cylon. So that was
quite nice because Boltar is an intelligent guy. So he thinks, well, who's the best person I could pin it on? Who's the most likely person? But because he's so smart, he figured it out. who the guy actually was.
A couple of really good comic beats in there as well, which is surprising considering how the situation is
that they're in. The straights are.
Fucking hell.
That's a term.
A couple of low-carb beers and you think you're fucking Jerry Seinfeld.
Wow. You went for Jerry Seinfeld. That's an interesting one.
Wow.
I've always thought of myself as more of a Richard Pryor than a Jerry Seinfeld.
Yeah, you guys are practically twins.
We are.
What did you think?
No, it's funny because I've not... I like Battlestar Galactica, but it's not one of those shows that I've gone back and watched again and again. I think I'd only seen the miniseries once before you and I watched it, years ago. So it's not like it's something that I know inside out. You know, it's not like when we watched The X-Files or one of the Star Trek shows or Babylon 5. You know, I don't have that much. I mean, most of the show, well, in fact, I think all the show I've watched once, and that was like, you know, nearly 20 years ago. And I think we've said before that there's something about the act of watching something for a podcast or watching something knowing you're going to be reviewing it or discussing it that makes you watch it in a different way. You know, you think about what you're analysing your opinion of it whilst you're watching it, but also you're watching it more closely, you know. And I think that...
You do definitely pick up on different details.
Absolutely. But I think that it made me realise just how good it was because... People talk about the show, and the miniseries is kind of like not sort of dismissed, but it's kind of like, the miniseries kind of introduces the world and kind of got things started. But I've forgotten how good the kind of the filmmaking is, you know. And also, a bit of a broken record here, because I said this on the first part, but just how ahead of its time it was, you know, considering it was made in 1903. no, I mean... Because it was, you know, made in 2003, the fact that so much of what we take for granted now in genre television, and this wasn't done for cable, this wasn't done for HBO, you know, they had all the restrictions that you get on, you know, regular TV, but it feels like a really early entry in the prestige TV canon.
Yeah.
You know, even, I mean, things like The Last of Us, you know, stuff that's on now and... It feels like it was that. If you figure that when this came out, you know, all the other genre shows on the air was Stargate, and it was kind of. And I like those shows. I've got nothing against them, but it was very much still the same style of TV that essentially had been going on since the 80s.
Well, I think one major draw card for this is that even though it is sci-fi and you know, those kind of ideals in storytelling, because they use the conceit of the lo-fi ship surviving because it doesn't have a network computer. And, you know, that's what the Cylons are hoping, you know, to use.
They use pens.
Yeah.
And wear glasses.
But because of that, it means it doesn't date. Because there's no sort of pew-pew lasers or...
Well, it's already slightly retro when it was made. Like consciously like, retro.
There are things that were made 20 years ago, 30 years ago, that were made with the idea of looking futuristic.
Well, think about, I mean, around this time, The Matrix.
Yeah.
I mean, The Matrix was a huge budget thing. And kind of looks a bit fucking silly now when you watch it.
Yeah, well, that's the whole point. Like, you can watch this now and go, okay, that's completely all plausible. You know, the Galactica's using real bullets.
There's no lasers, is there?
No, there's no bizarre force shield. There's no, like all of the fighter pilots are lo-fi.
And that extends to the subtextual stuff, the way the decisions that the characters have to make.
Mm.
You know, it's they even say at certain points, well, you know, we can't just do the heroic thing and hope it works out.
No.
You know, but the subtext of what they're saying is this isn't a TV show.
No.
You know, and it is obviously a TV show.
Yeah.
But... it's kind of, and there are TV conventions in there, but at the same time, you know, there's TV conventions in real life. But one of the things that I like about Galactica is, and he really captures this, is it is dark, and a lot of people do point to this show as being a really early sort of opening salvo in the darkening of, or the sort of grittification of genre TV.
Mm.
But it's the characters are still heroic in the ways that kind of in the ways that people are in real life, which is that people are complicated. People are good people do shit things and shit people do good things.
Yeah.
In the same way that, you know, a character like Baltar is in the first couple of episodes, he's largely played as, you know, kind of comedic and, you know, just a complete pragmatist. But he's one of those characters where if he can do the right thing, he will. It's no skin off his nose. Mm. You know, he'd prefer to do the right thing. But if he would benefit from doing the wrong thing, then he will.
I think in terms of him as a character, what the Cylons have underestimated is his own need, innate need for survival.
He doesn't give a shit about their agenda or anybody's agenda.
But... and when he says, I'm not on anyone's side, like she has assumed he's on their side.
Yeah.
When he couldn't, they like the fact that he doesn't give a shit about humans, but he also does not give a shit about Cylons.
Mm.
You know, all he's out for is what's best for him. And at the moment, what's best for him is making sure that the Galactica survives.
The other thing as well, that this is kind of the elephant in the room, is that this was the first big genre show to come out after 9/11.
Right.
And I think that the destruction of the colonies and all of that, and the fact that the Cylons keep talking about God, so there's a holy war element to it, you can't help but see. I mean, I mentioned in the last episode the visual influence of Desert Storm, the Desert Storm, and of the post 9/11 conflicts on the filmmaking. You know, the helmet cams and the digital filmmaking and the ability to capture imagery in real life war zones that didn't exist in Vietnam or any of these other big kind of like cinematically documented conflicts affecting the filmmaking. But I think also you've got that post 9/11 narrative as well of mistrust and not trusting your neighbors and the sort of the trauma of being attacked.
Yeah.
And, you know, the idea that of this could never happen on home soil and all that's in there as well.
Yeah.
But the other thing as well that really jumped out at me is how good every single cast member is.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they're all really different. They're all really different kinds of actors. Mm. Like, you've got Edward James Olmos, who's a very method kind of almost...
Very stoic, isn't
he? Well, he comes almost from that Scorsese kind of school of 70s actors, you know? But then you've got, like, actors like the guy who plays Lee, who plays Apollo, who's a very modern kind of subtle facial actor, you know, where you can see the thinking going on, you know.
Yeah.
And I think having all of those, and then you've got the guy who plays Baltar, who's just extremely British. Like, you could totally see him being in, like, a Hugh Grant movie or, like...
Well, he was in Bridget Jones.
Oh, yeah, Hugh Grant was in Bridget Jones, wasn't he? Yeah. But you can see him in that kind of... is it Ian Curtis? Is he the guy who makes those
movies? Richard Curtis.
Richard Curtis.
Ian Curtis was the from the fucking...
Oh, the singer.
Blue Monday. Was it Blue Monday? No, Happy Mondays.
From... not New Order. They became New Order. Oh, my God. This is going to bother me.
I thought it was Happy Mondays.
No. They did Blue Monday, the song. Ian Curtis was in... Oh, God. They became New Order. They did Love Will Tear Us Apart Again.
Yeah.
Hang on a second. I've got to look it up because it's going to bug me.
Fuck, I even watched that film with Steve Coogan about
Joy Division.
Joy Division.
Well, shall I sort of take us through?
Yeah.
Like I said, like on the last episode, I won't go beat for beat, but there are a few notes that I've made that I wanted to mention. A couple of fun connections to the original, because Ronald Moore, who runs this show, wasn't really that much of a fan of the original. He knew it and he grew up on it, but he said he always thought it was a bit cheesy. It was very 70s. But it is interesting the stuff that they've chosen to keep and the stuff that they haven't. Like, I mean, tonally, the show is completely different. Like, it's really, you know, I mean, the original series was like...
Presumably in the original, there is, like, it's not just the legend of Earth. They are, like, Earth is...
Well, they believe it. It is a legend in the original. It is a legend, but you don't get the whole thing about Adama kind of saying he knows where it is and that it's real. They just take it on faith in the show because it was a 70s show, so it was just much more simple in the way that they viewed it. And it was basically a kids show. You know, it was designed for kids who went to see Star Wars. Hey, here's something that's a little bit like Star Wars on TV. You know, that was essentially what it was, and I liked it. But they have kept a lot of elements. Like, and it's weird because he doesn't come back after the first episode, but the kid, Boxy, was a lead character in the original series. He was like the kid character. He had a robot dog. That was kind of what it was. Who in the series was actually played by a monkey in a robot suit.
Oh, my God.
And I was watching a making of it and he just hung around. Like, poor monkey was on set the entire time that they're on there. They're lucky he didn't kill the child or something.
Yeah.
Don't think you get away with that now. And there's like lots of other like odd things. Like, all of the ships in the fleet have got the same names. But all the mythology as well, this whole idea of Kobol, that it was this the home world that they came from, and these tribes all went off and formed all of these different colonies, like Caprica. And like, Caprica's a spin-off show of Battlestar Galactica that's about Adama's father. Before all of this sort of stuff and the creations of the Cylons and the First Cylon War and all that kind of stuff. So there's all of these elements. It's as though they figured, well, let's keep all the stuff that we can just so the geeks will get little kind of member berries, you know, going off. But for the most part, you know, like I said, the big difference is the tone. I also like the fact that when they're going to do a jump, like they call it FTL, like faster than light jumps, it's like a really big deal.
Yeah.
Like, they're all having to, the whole ship's having to work together, and like, they've got like compasses and protractors. And
but that's that, like, I think that feeds into what I was saying about the fact it's lo-fi makes it kind of timeless.
Well, they're having to do maths. Yeah. So, like, work out how it's going to, like,
I mean, they might as well be a ship in the sky.
Yeah. That's the thing.
Yeah.
I mean, there's one moment.
I mean, it really, in fact, that final confrontation with the Cylons reminded me a wee bit of the final confrontation that the ship has a master and commander.
Yeah, it is really similar, isn't it? Like the way that they shoot, they show the guns feel almost like, what do you call them? Like cannons.
Yeah.
You know, and it's funny, I remember when a big advocate for this show when it first came out was Charlie Brooker. He wrote loads about it and he was always really vocal about it.
Mm.
And it was funny because I remember seeing Ronald Moore talk about it because Charlie Brooker was like, oh, it's not really science fiction, it's just a drama show. Don't be put off by, you know, the fact that it's sci-fi, it's really good. And Ross remembers Roland Moore saying on Twitter, he's like, I really appreciate you saying that. He's like, but it is sci-fi and we're not ashamed of the fact that it's sci-fi.
He's like,
I get what you're saying and thank you.
Yeah.
He's like, but it's like when people
say... But I wear my sci-fi badge.
Yeah. And it's funny as well because, I mean, Roland Moore was a very well-known person in geek shows, but he was always a hired person. Like, he worked on Star Trek, but he didn't run it. He was he was a head writer. And the thing about this show was that this was the first time he ever had his own thing where he was running the writer's room and it was his show.
Mm.
And, you know, he wrote a lot of the episodes. And it was funny because you can see so many, I mean, first of all, loads of actors from Star Trek appear in it. But you can see so many storylines are the things where you could see I bet you he pitched that. And he quit Star Trek during the first season of Voyager. He walked off it. Because he basically said that they pussied out on the concept of the show.
Yeah.
And so much of this, Battlestar Galactica, is clearly what he thought Voyager was going to be.
Yeah.
The ship trying to get back somewhere, the adversity of that, the fact that it's falling apart. The original idea of Voyager was you've got the Maquis and you've got the Federation and there was this tension between them You've got like Laura and you've got Adama, the government and the
military.
And they kind of have this uneasy alliance at the end of the first episode, at the end of this episode, but it won't come as any surprise to know that tensions arise in that relationship, you know? So there is a lot of, they wouldn't let him do that on Star Trek. So he's like he's kept a notepad of all these things almost.
But the thing that gets me when people say, oh, you should watch it, it's really good. It's like, it's sci-fi, but it's more drama.
Yeah.
Like, that,
have you watched any sci-fi?
All sci-fi is that way. Like, it's always
When people say that, what personal, do they think it is?
Like, but sci-fi, all of the sci-fi I've watched has been, you know, personal relationships, really big themes that they explore in different ways, about human connection, about, finding problem solving stuff, but also finding the part of yourself to be okay with a decision and something.
And the thing that
stuff that people deal with every single day.
The thing is,
just in space,
what it affords you, and I think we've talked about this when we talked about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., is it removes contemporary context. So you look at things with an objective eye.
Yeah.
Like if there was a film that was about some current political situation, you would bring your biases to that.
Yeah.
But if all of that was removed and it was redressed and it was completely different context, you might actually be challenged and you might actually sort of,
case in point, Star Trek, right from the original series all the way through.
Yeah.
You know, especially Star Trek, the original series.
Yeah.
Especially Discovery.
Yeah. Well, a lot of the stuff.
And Strange New Worlds
I mean, if you look at, like, a lot of the stuff that they did in the 60s Star Trek around gender identity.
Yeah.
You couldn't talk about that stuff in the 90s, never mind the 60s.
Yeah.
You know, and it's okay to have interracial kisses if one of them, the people's an alien.
Exactly.
But you're still showing audiences an interracial kiss. You know, you've still done the job.
Yeah. Well, think about Jadzia on DS9.
Yeah.
She's a woman who used to be a man, has very masculine and feminine parts about her.
Well, I love the moment, and I know this has become a meme. Like, you and I mentioned this when we first watched it, where Jadzia meets her old Klingon friend, And he walks up to her and he hugs her. And she's like, Curzon, great to see you. And she's like, I go by Jadzia now. And he's like, Jadzia, great to see you.
Yeah.
And it's just not an issue. He immediately, like she, in a friendly way, corrects him. He corrects himself and then just continues the conversation as though nothing's different.
Yeah.
But when you're watching that in 1994, you're not thinking of transgenderism. We knew what transgenderism was in 1994. Yeah. Beyond Eddie Izzard or, 1994. We didn't know what we were fucking doing. You know, gender identity was just this big kind of confusion. It was a joke. It was pantomime. It was just, But I think that it lays groundwork. It kind of prepares you and gives you this objective context to consume, all of this stuff. But all of these real world elements, like this analog stuff that you mentioned, kind of adds to the tension as well. So it's not just future proofing the show, it creates tension. Mm. It's the fact that the idea that they can't just press a magic red button and go. You know, this is a giant spaceship and moving it takes a lot of work.
Yeah. Fuel, manpower.
Yeah, collaboration.
Yeah.
So they go to the depot. They're trying to find their way to the depot to get the arms. We learn that Apollo did a fake out and actually survived. One of the things that really made me think of 9/11 and that contemporary thing is when they go out on the deck and you've got all the body bags.
Yeah.
Out, that feels like much more macabre than you'd get in something like Star Trek or one of those shows. Certainly at the time.
Yeah.
There was a kind of really kind of real world element.
Real world implications to it. Yeah. Yeah.
I like all of the scenes with Baltar interacting with people and just being a weasel. It's really good stuff. And
as we said at the time, when Cylon's seducing him and he's sort of giving into it, we were giggling about when he gets interrupted about, hey, I see you have a massive erection.
Yeah. What's that about? So I always get them when I'm stressed.
You look a bit flushed.
Yes. One of the other things as well is they talk about how they need Tylium, they call it, the fuel. Mm. And that's the name of what they call the fuel in the original 70s series. So it's like all of these little, the accoutrements of the universe have got the same names as well. Because although the original series was a bit silly, it was a great show on paper in the way that the concept, which is identical, was really solid. And all of the elements of the universe, like the design of the ships and the space names for things, the culture, the colonies, the Lords of Kobol, all of the different sort of tribes that they've got, and the history of the Cylons, and all of that was really solid. Mm. So it's as though they've gone back and gone, okay, let's just sort of take the bones of this thing and reimagine it. That was, like I said that last time, it was the first time that we heard that term reimagining used. I like the moment where they realise that a whole bunch of the ships in their fleet don't have faster-than-light capability.
Yeah.
And I love the way it's shot because the camera's moving around them. It's circling them, having the conversation. And then Lee says, you're going to have to make a decision. And the camera just stops on Laura. Mm. And I like the fact that although she's meant to be the kind of the liberal, she's was the Minister of Education and all that, she does make a decision. And they don't make her hand wring about it. No,
she's a good leader in that she might be sad about her decision, but she knows what the decision has to be.
She'll be sad when she's on her own.
Yeah. The thing I liked about that moment is that she makes the decision and no one argues with her. They go off and they execute what they need to execute because the decision's been given. They respect her authority.
Yeah, yeah. Also, I think they know that it's the only – there's no alternative.
No.
It's like, okay, well, we can be honourable and all die.
Yeah.
It's thousands versus hundreds of thousands.
Mm.
We get all of that stuff as well on the munitions base with the what seems to be like a war profiteer who's getting sick. But obviously it turns out that he's one of the 12. And he mentions before he reveals himself, and I think this is kind of one of the subtexts of the show, is that the Cylons are God's retribution for humanity's mistakes.
Yeah.
And that almost God has now decided that the Cylons are his favoured people.
Mm.
And but obviously this is a Cylon saying this, so this gives you a slight early insight into where this theological mythology that the Cylons have got going, but they are now God's children, and that humanity aren't God's children anymore. And that's religious superiority often leads to war.
Yeah, it's also a very Nazi outlook.
Yeah, that's
you
a good
know,
point.
Having the preferred race,
the master race.
Yeah, it is. You know, the master race. We're going to get rid of anyone who is not of that.
And this idea as well that the Cylons have gained sentiency, and it's almost as though one of the inevitable results of sentiency is the need to understand some greater meaning in the universe.
Yeah.
So they've found God, and they've decided...
God help us all.
Well, like all people, you know, it's like when you heard about scientists during the Dark Ages getting burnt because they were saying that we weren't the centre of the universe, that we were just orbiting this sun and there are millions of them. And nobody wants to hear that. You want to think that you are the favoured people.
Just the way you said they found God just made me think, Dead Heat and all that, how they had those like crazy movie trailers for it. Two cops, blah, blah, blah. You can imagine it for this. They found God, and God help everybody else. It just writes itself.
It does, yeah. But the Cylons essentially are now believing that humanity has fallen into kind of second place. So we see Ty arguing with Laura about, we've got to fight, we've got to keep going. So you're starting to see that there might be this bit of a division between the army and the civilian government. We get lots of emotional reunions between characters as things start to look a lot better. And one of the things that I like about this episode is that there's lots of nice kind of chorally music, everything's okay for a short while montage sequences.
Yeah.
You know, it's as though it's not all misery all the time. There are moments where it's actually quite nice that they're celebrating being alive. They realize there's another son on the board. And there's a great stoic father and son hug between Adama and Lee as well. Mm. And of course, Edward James Olmos, as we've talked about for many years on Chinstroker versus Punch, he's the master of the hug or punch.
Yeah.
Is he going to hug or is he going to punch?
I mean, he looks like half his face is about to fall off in that scene.
Yeah. Very, very, very intense inward actor.
Mm.
And he's so serious as well. Like, there's an episode of Battlestar Galactica, a slight, very small spoiler, where the Cylons are attacking them every 33 minutes on the dot. The episode's called 33. It's a great episode. And they don't understand why it is. But then they realise what it is the Cylons are trying to keep them awake. So they'll go mad.
Right.
Because the idea being is if you don't sleep, you'll go into psychosis. And Edward James Olmos walked into the table read and insisted that they all stayed awake for like several days before they filmed it.
Oh, God.
And they were like, oh, God, we've got to... Yeah. It was like that. But they said that they tried it, but all that happened was they all just spoke really slowly. After like a couple of days, they were just like, this is not good television. So he was like, okay, and they all went home and slept. But he's a very, very intense actor. Hang on a second. Oh, yeah, there's a moment where, and I've forgotten this because this does become quite a big plot point, where Starbuck admits to Lee that she gave Zach a pass.
Yeah.
Because she was in love with him and felt bad for him. And that him prematurely moving up through the ranks could have contributed to his death.
Yeah.
You know, so that's another one of many secrets that characters are carrying around. It's almost as though there's all of these sort of secret bombs that have been seeded into the show.
Yeah.
So you're like, okay, well, it's going to be a real shitstorm when a certain person figures that out. And there's a lot of that in the show. It's very much kind of like, oh, no, this is the one where blah, blah is going to find out about that thing, you know. And you know when it's going to happen as well, because everything will be going really well and everybody will be getting along. It's like Babylon 5, you know, when Londo wants to take Jakar out for a drink. Oh, sorry, yeah. It's the other way around. But Londo is just like nuked his planet and not told him, you know. Yeah. So like, whoops.
We might, maybe rain check on the
drink. Yeah, you're like, oh, Jakar, look, this is really embarrassing, right? I feel like I
just seem okay to bombing your planet. Yeah.
That's it. It's like a
my bad.
Yeah.
Drinks on me.
Egg on my face, mate. I'm like, and there was a couple of like weird, well, not weird, but sort of subtle plot things that had never occurred to me before that made me realise just how well thought out this was, because I like the idea that the weapons depot was in that nebula because they knew historically, like back 40 or 50 years ago, whenever the Cylon War was actually really happening before it all became like a silent Cold War, that the Cylons couldn't go in there because it played havoc with their technology. So that's why it's there. And it also means that it reveals that that guy's a Cylon. So it's just a really nifty bit of writing where it doesn't rely on coincidence or, oh, well, that worked out well. It all makes absolute logical sense within the context of the storyline.
Yeah.
And it's funny because that's something that, again, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. does really well, you know, where you don't feel like it's being engineered in order to sort of trick you into going along with it.
No, absolutely.
You know? And it's what I often call the J.J. Abrams style of storytelling, where you're having a great time and then afterwards you go back and go, hang on. that's a load of bollocks, that is. Like, you know, but it was fun at the time, you know.
Yeah.
They arrest the journalist because Baltar's dropped him in. Adama goes to see Laura. I also have a note about the fact that I am nearly 50 years old, but I still find the phrase penal colony amusing.
Oh my god, you're such a child.
Just saying it. It's like I also like the fact that when Adama walks in to see Laura, she immediately just says, are you planning a coup?
Yeah.
Because it's what the audience are thinking.
I like the fact that he's having to slosh down an absolutely massive mouthful of spaghetti before he can say anything to her. And, like, you can imagine acting that scene. It's like, quick. Dun, 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 dun,
yeah. Blah, 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 none blah, of this blah. Howard Wolowitz pushing a fake salad around a plate for like 20 minutes bullshit.
No.
That's a pet peeve of Hannah's mind, by the way.
Yeah. Tickling a piece of lettuce.
Some actors are really good at not eating any food and not drawing attention to the fact that they're not eating any food.
Howard Wolowitz sucks at it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he really does draw attention to it.
Yeah, he does.
Basically, she says that they have to run and he's like, look, we need to get back in the war. And she's just like, dude, the war is over. We lost. We see shitloads of Cylons rock up. Adama sees sense fairly quickly. He's like, right, we got to go. And I like the fact that, and this is very much of the times, there's two points in this miniseries where characters question other people's use of the word we. You know, like Lee says, we are doing this in reference to him and Laura at one point, and Adama's like, what do you mean we?
Yeah.
You know, and Baltar does as well. He says we in regards to, so he's starting to identify as being one of the colonials.
Yeah.
But again, is that just because that's the convenient, you know, that they're kind of,
that's what currently suits him.
They're giving him somewhere to sleep, basically, at this point, you know.
Yeah.
He's a sort of fair weather friend. This is where I've got the note about how I love that they use crash zooms in the CG sequences.
For the jumps.
You know, when they sort of, not those, but they are, but yeah, I know what you mean. Like when you've got that force, that weird perspective thing. But also,
what's a crash zoom?
A crash zoom is just when you zoom in on something really fast. So like, you know, in the space battles, where the camera will go out of focus and it's like it'll find a ship and zoom in on it.
Right, yeah.
And it's something that you usually would only do if you're filming a documentary. But of course, this is all CG stuff, so it's meticulously put together over hundreds of hours by like a large team of people. So nothing happens by accident. Everything is, you know, incredibly meticulously designed. But they're using, that had never been done. You know,
who does the choreography for that kind of thing?
I think it would be the director in tandem with the, I mean, they'd storyboard it. They'd do like pre-visualization of it, which you can do pretty quick and rough and ready. And then they'd just go in and fill in all the pixels. That's a bit that takes a really long time. But just the idea of those things were always seen as errors. And there came a point where filmmakers realized that there was something about errors that gave it legitimacy. It's a little bit like you kind of trust what Bob Dylan's singing because he kind of can't sing. You know, whereas really talented singers like your Mariah Careys or your Whitney Houstons, you admire the technique, but it makes what they're saying seem slightly less sincere because it's so powerful and so perfect. You know, whereas sometimes rough edges give something a kind of a humanity. And I think that that's what's going on with a lot of the effect sequences in this, is the fact that they're using things that normally somebody who's shooting a documentary would do and probably would be cursing you, like, oh, God, I got that bit out of focus, shit, you know. But when you see that, your brain processes that as reality.
Yeah.
And you're not meant to be thinking of it when you're watching it. You know,
it's also like in CG sequences where you get water on the lens. Like, that shouldn't happen, but they do it to make it more real.
Yeah, there's a great bit. There's a great one-shotter.
There was something really recently.
Well, the one that I always think of is Children of Men. There's a great one-shotter in that where a bit of blood gets on the lens and is slowly dripping down it as you follow Clive Owen through this rubble and he's being chased. And it just immediately makes it feel, because when you look at like Star Wars, there's no sense that that's being captured. It's like you're God. You're just there with this view and everything's perfect because of course it is. Why wouldn't it be? But by making something seem like, oh, you know, they missed that bit, or, and there's moments as well where there'll be an explosion and the camera will pull away almost as though the cameraman was like, oh God, it's so bright. It gives this, and again, you're not intellectually thinking about it, but your brain is going, that's real.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think that's now a known thing, but at the time people were like, holy shit, you know, and you could see it start to creep into films a little bit. There's a couple of, in Attack of the Clones, the Star Wars film, there's a couple of CG crash zooms in that as well. I remember at the time thinking, oh fuck, that's a new bit of film grammar that I've not seen in these films before.
I don't even notice it.
But one of the other things I like as well, and we've talked about this before, is I like how distinctive the different groups' ships are.
Yeah.
Because we've talked before about how one of the things that's great about Star Trek and Babylon 5 is you know who's who.
Yeah, and absolutely. You know who are the good ones and who are the not good ones.
Yeah, yeah. And the Cylon ships and the Colonial Vipers are so...
so different.
Yeah, you can almost tell them by their silhouette.
I mean, Babylon 5, that's a really good shout for that because there are so many races, you do need them to have very distinctive ships.
But they're so different. The Vorlons look like ships, look like they're alive. The Shadows are like giant spiders, you know, so it's all very different.
Yeah.
Grabs, I love the moment where Starbuck kind of scoops up Lee's ship and takes him away. And I love the fact that when they get in, he goes quiet for a second and he just shouts, jump! And I just thought, bum, ba, 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 ba. So it's a good job I don't make these things because I'd be like, we need a Van Halen needle drop. as soon as he shouts, jump. But it took a real tonal turn in that final act.
You're not thinking the Pointer Sisters.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For my love, jump in. So we get a good ceremony near the end. We get a lot of that kind of the Lords of Kobol mythology. And the So Say We All as well. That's the kind of the...
So Say We All.
That's the... kind of the where no one has gone before of Battlestar Galactica.
It just reminds me of Bill Murray's rousing speech he gives in Meatballs about how it just doesn't matter if they win or if they lose, and they all end up like yelling, it just doesn't matter, it just doesn't matter. Yeah,
exactly. You can't beat a good chant. And I like the fact that when Adama starts his speech, he says, They say life here began out there. That's the first words of the sacred scroll. And I love that because the original Battlestar Galactica series, every episode started with a lightly spaced The Final Frontier, but it was, they say life here began out there with ancient humans who may have been the forefathers of the Egyptians or the Mayans. And he does this whole sort of like bit that's like an introduction. So I like the fact that he says, you know, life here began out there, the first words of the sacred scroll. It's almost as though he's saying the first words of the original series from the 70s. And they talk about how the 13th colony left for a planet called Earth. And he says he knows where it is, but it's kind of bullshit, you know, or at least, well, him knowing where it is bullshit. So, of course, this question will hang over the show of is Earth, well, we know Earth real, obviously. But, you know, will they find it? Will it be real in the world of the show? And if they do, what will that mean? What will that be? Mm. And then we see Laura tell him that they need a civilian government. And then we finish up with Baltar ingratiating himself to stay on the ship. And there's lots of little... one of the things I like about this show is it's a true ensemble because you've got so many different tiers of characters. You've got all of these major characters, but then you've got characters like Billy, the president's aide, and the girl that he's kind of got a frisson with, and all of these different tier of, and you know, and they all the it's not like Babylon 5 where when you go to the show, some people have gone, some people, you know, every single actor from this carries straight on into the show, and you kind of wouldn't know that it was made a year later. It's very seamless.
Yeah,
it just goes into the first episode of the series, but. And then we finish up with the reveal that, and it's funny, my only, not criticism, because I kind of get it, is that there are 12 models of these Cylons, yet at the end of this episode, there's a bunch of Cylons hanging around together, and it just happens to be ones from the ones we know about.
Yeah.
Like, there's no logical reason why they wouldn't have all of the other representatives of the other ones there. That's one of those rare cases of it's a TV show, and obviously they want to hold on to that mystery for longer, you know, because, I mean, that's gold to have that sort of shit in your show. You know, to know that there's what, like, you know.
Working out who.
There's like eight unknown people, you know. I mean, that's a lot of characters,
who,
you know.
Who don't necessarily know that they're Cylons.
So,
you know, you're sort of checking everybody's behaviour.
Yeah, exactly. So it just means that there's a lot of, I think, and I'm going to start wrapping up my thoughts here a little bit before passing over to you. But I think that the one thing that, particularly knowing where the show goes, is seeing how much meat there is. Like how much, you know, every character's got a secret. There's a lot of mystery. There's a lot of stakes. It's just very fertile. You know, there's like I say, it's not a long show. So they don't have to hold on to that stuff for long. Again, like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., they don't piss about.
No.
I mean, like, secrets get found out, like, pretty immediately, and then it's the consequences of those. But it's been really interesting going back and watching it because, you know, it has been 20 years, and I think that there is a legacy of this show.
I think it holds up really, really well.
Yeah. What, any other final thoughts from you before we
wrap up? I think it's extremely strong and something that, you know, if people haven't given it a chance, should definitely look into. It's certainly not something I would pick, you know.
I don't think the name does it any favours.
To watch, but I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I'd give it a 8.5 out of 10.
Yeah. And like, I think the name of the show doesn't do it any favors.
No.
I mean, it kind of has to be called that because it's based on a beloved franchise.
Yeah.
But Battlestar Galactica, it's like, you know, Space Battle Fantastico or something. You know, it's just it's very it's very sci-fi, and I think it's almost like Buffy the Vampire Slayer. It's kind of. It's a bit of a disadvantage to it, but anyway, Hannah, what are we talking about next time?
I think next episode we are going to do the Jean-Claude Van Damme masterpiece, Time Cop.
Very nice, very nice.
Looking forward to that.
You don't want to watch the Scott Adkins sequel.
Fuck no.
He's in John Wick 4, you know. You know he's the main villain.
Well, I'm not watching John Wick for Scott Atkins. Do you know Time Cop will be 30 years old next year?
Wow.
Amazing.
No, I can believe that. I can believe that.
With everybody's favourite, Ron Silver.
Yeah, what a shitheel.
Directed by Peter Hyams.
Yeah.
And written by Mark Verheiden and Mike Richardson.
Mark Verheiden. He's a writer on Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, on this version.
Oh, well, there you go.
That's really freaky. I'd never made that connection before.
Well, look at that. Things have a way of linking up to
what
each other.
What incredible planning you did there, Hannah.
Yes, it was completely on purpose.
All right, so quick reminder, guys, to send us some feedback at rewatchprojectpodcast@gmail.com. Or on our YouTube channel, you can leave comments on there, or you can reach out to us via Instagram or Twitter, where in both instances we are at Rewatch Proj. So check out our friend shows as well, and reviews on Apple Podcasts and Spotify are also appreciated. But for now, that is us.
Bye-bye.